If you can, please join me in Exodus chapter number 11, verse number 4. We have gotten through 9 plagues. And the last plague was the plague of darkness, 3 days worth. I believe that that darkness probably fell on the 11th, 12th, and 13th days of the first Jewish month, a spring month. And Moses knows that there is one final plague after the darkness plague, and that that plague is going to be the death of the firstborn. He knows it's the ultimate plague because God told him about it long ago, way back Mount Sinai, burning bush time. So God is preparing Moses and Aaron ahead of time for how the Israelis are supposed to get ready to leave once that death of the firstborn takes place with the 10th plague. My suspicion is that a lot of that preparation was done on the 10th day of that first month, before the time of darkness fell on the Egyptians. My reason for thinking that is because the Israelis will be told to select their Passover lamb on the 10th day of the first month, and that it will become a tradition from then on out. And so I believe there's a historical reason for that, that it was selected the day before the darkness fell. Now, in these next couple of chapters, we read about the preparations for this 10th plague. And we know that some of this information is communicated to Pharaoh at the end of the 9th plague, because Pharaoh says, "Don't you ever come back into my presence." And Moses and Aaron say, "We won't be back." So they don't talk to Pharaoh after the death of the firstborn, not face to face. And so I need to stress that as we move forward. So chapter 11, verse 4, Moses said, "Thus says he who is." About midnight. Now, when we hear midnight, we think 12 o'clock or 2400. And that's because we work with clocks. Midnight should be thought of in the way that these guys think about it. It's midpoint between the sun going down and the sun coming back up again. It's close to midnight, but depending on the time of year, it might be closer to 1 o'clock in our morning. But right around that midpoint of the darkness, now this is God talking, so it says, "I will go out in the midst of Egypt, and every firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sits on his throne, even to the firstborn of the slave girl who is behind the handmill, and all the firstborn of the cattle." Now, I want to help you rethink your imagination at this point. It is typical, I've noticed in all my years of ministry, for people to focus on little babies dying in this plague. And yes, some would. But the majority of firstborn people in a population are adults. I'm a firstborn. I'm 65. 64, going on 65, I guess. That's who you should be thinking about, is adults. We know that Thutmose III was followed by a non-firstborn son. We actually have the name of his firstborn son. I don't have it in my notes here. But he just disappears from the record before his father dies. We know he was appointed to a government position, but then he is not there once his father dies to take over the throne. So he died, and it's because of this. He was an adult. And so from all of the royalty firstborn men down to the worker firstborn men, down into the slave firstborn men, not Egyptian, not Israelis, because of what happens next, they're going to die. And that includes the animals, which, again, you're going to have adult animals that will just suddenly die in the middle of the night. That's the plague that we're talking about here. Verse 6. There shall be a great cry throughout all the land of Egypt, such as there has never been, nor ever will be again. So this is going to be a shocking event for the Egyptian people. And they will be warned ahead of time that it's coming. Verse 7, but not a dog shall growl against any of the people of Israel. That's some sort of idiom. That basically nothing untoward is going to happen to the Israelites, either man or beast, that you may know that he who is makes a distinction between Egypt and Israel. And so this is communicated not just simply to the Israelites, but it's communicated to Pharaoh and his leadership council. And from there, it gets disseminated to everyone, that the Israelis will be immune from this. Now, they're not going to be immune in the same way they were last time. I believe that none of the previous nine plagues touched them. None of them. We have some specific ones that highlight that, but I believe none of them touched the Israelis. This one, though, the Israelis will be expected to do something. And if they don't, they will lose their firstborn. Verse number 8. All these your servants shall come down to me and bow down to me, saying, get out, you and all the people who follow you. And after that, I will go out. So this part right here has been specifically communicated to Pharaoh at the same time that Pharaoh said, get out of my presence, don't ever come back here again, or I'll kill you. And Moses and Aaron say, we won't be back. But before we go, let me tell you what God says. Firstborn will die. And no Israeli firstborn are going to die. And you will be telling us to get out with everything we have. I guarantee you. And then we will go. And then the last part of verse 8, and he went out from Pharaoh in hot anger. So this is, again, that continuation of that really, really tense moment that happens between Pharaoh and Moses and Aaron at the close of the 3 days of darkness. So I'm believing that we're talking about the afternoon of the 13th. The 14th will start at sunset, and the 14th will be the day that the Israelis have to get everything ready for their departure after midnight that night. Okay? Verse number 9. Then he who is said to Moses, Pharaoh will not listen to you, that my wonders may be multiplied in the land of Egypt. So basically God's saying, you already know he's not going to pay attention to your warning because he hasn't before, and this will allow me to finish my full judgment against Pharaoh, against his people, the taskmasters against my people Israel, against the Egyptian gods and goddesses. Verse 10, Moses and Aaron did all these wonders before Pharaoh, and he who is hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he did not let the people of Israel go out of his land. Now, I believe that is the fourth place that mentions God hardening Pharaoh's heart. And it's happening to bring it to a climax. Pharaoh started down this path of hard-heartedness. God just finished it with him. Chapter 12, God gives calendar instructions to Moses. He who is said to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, this month shall be for you the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year for you. Now, months are a series of days that are connected to the phases of the moon. Month and moon are related as words. For the ancient peoples, the month started with the first visible crescent of a new moon. And they knew that a month would be roughly 29 or 30 days long. So they knew that much about the lunar cycle. From creation until this time, it was typical for the ancient peoples to start their calendars in the fall, because that was the beginning of the agricultural cycle. The grain harvests happened in the late spring and throughout the summer. Same thing with the fruit trees and things. They happened in the summer. And so most everything was finished being brought in by the time that fall arrived. And then the cycle would start over again. So the Israelites had been using a fall start calendar. God tells Moses, I want you to start a different calendar now. I want you to start this calendar in the spring, because this is going to be connected to your new start as a nation, your exodus from Egypt. So again, verse 2, this month shall be for you the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year for you. Tell the congregation of Israel that on the 10th day of this month, every man shall take a lamb according to their father's houses, a lamb for a household. So this is my reason that I gave you earlier, that I believe that Moses was given information before the plague of darkness to pass on to the Israelites, set aside a special lamb on this particular day, the 10th day of this month. And that will be the lamb that will be offered as the Passover lamb on the 14th. So my guess is that what we're reading in chapter 12 right now was communicated before the ninth plague. Just my opinion. Now, they are supposed to have a lamb that will be sufficient meat for a household. And when we talk about a household, we're talking about a mom, a dad, maybe a grandma and grandpa, and all the kids, maybe some cousins, because there's more than one mom or dad that's part of a household. So we've got a lot of possible versions of a household here. It's the usual estimate is that the Israeli people took was for every 10 adult men and all the associated women and children with them, you needed one lamb. So verse number 4 says, if the household is too small for one lamb. So what if it's just grandpa and grandma? What if it's just a mom and a dad and a couple of kids? Well, they can't eat a whole lamb to themselves. So they are told, then he and his nearest neighbor shall take according to the number of persons, according to what each can eat, you shall make your count for the lamb. So combine smaller households, and again, more than likely, so that you've got 10 adult men and all their associated women and children. And that's one lamb. Now, here's what the lamb needs to be like. Your lamb shall be without blemish, a male a year old. So a lamb that was born less than a year ago, last lambing season, basically. It's not become sexually active to be used for breeding purposes, is what really we're kind of looking at here. Now, you may take it from the sheep or from the goats. Either of those two animal kinds can be used. And you shall keep it until the 14th day of this month, when the whole assembly of Israel, of the congregation of Israel, shall kill their lambs at twilight. Now, the word twilight here is actually a representation of a literal Hebrew term, between the two evenings. What I think that we should understand that to mean, and which becomes the practice of Israel later, is that you have to kill it on the 14th day of the Jewish month. That day starts at sunset and finishes at sunset the next day. And I think those are the two evenings that we have in mind here. Now, for the first Passover, the very first Passover, we know that everybody in Israel killed their Passover lambs in the afternoon of the 14th. And then they cooked them up and they started eating them on the 15th. We know that because they will leave after that meal in the middle of the night on the 15th. In the time of Jesus, however, we have the gospel stories showing that some Jewish people killed their Passover lambs after the sun went down, immediately after the sun went down, and they had their meals cooked that night, early on the 14th. While other Jewish people waited until the afternoon of the 14th, killed their Passover lambs and cooked them, and then they ate them after the sun went down and the 15th had started. And how do we know that? Because Jesus ate a Passover lamb on Thursday night after the sun went down, when the 14th started, with his apostles. And he says, I have long desired to eat this final Passover meal with you before my suffering. But the next daylight hours, while Jesus is on trial, the Pharisees on the Sanhedrin will not go into the Praetorian palace of Pontius Pilate, because that would make them unclean and unable to butcher and cook their Passover lambs on the afternoon of the 14th. And so we have two Passover meals kind of being described in the Gospels. But the reason for it is because some of the Jewish people had decided that they would eat it in the evening hours when the 14th began, while other Jewish people felt that they would continue sacrificing it or butchering it in the afternoon of the 14th and then eat it during the evening hours that start the 15th. Now, I hope that's not too confusing, but I wanted for you to see that the wording here in verse number 6, the literal wording, is that the Passover lamb just has to be butchered between sunset that starts the 14th and sunset that starts the 15th. Okay, verse number 7. Now, here's the procedure. Once you've butchered it, and I think I want to clarify that too. I grew up hearing that the Jewish people sacrificed their Passover lambs. That is not quite accurate. They didn't have to go up to the Temple Mount to have their animals butchered there. They could do it where they were at. Those that lived in Jerusalem may have availed themselves of the services of the temple, but it was not a requirement because this is not a sacrifice per se. This is a meal that is butchered for the use of the people on this anniversary of the Exodus. And so Moses tells each of the family heads, the animal that you selected on the 10th, the perfect male animal, on the 14th, you are going to cut its throat. You're going to catch that arterial blood in a bowl. And then before you skin it out, or before you prepare it to be cooked, this is what you have to do with the blood. Verse 7. Then you shall take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts, those are the sides of a doorway, and on the lintel of the houses in which you eat it. The lintel is that cross piece at the top of the door. And that's what you would do to your entry door. The Israelites lived in houses in Goshen. They will use a little piece of vegetation, a hyssop plant, in order to do this. So they will strike each side of the door, probably right at shoulder height, and then strike the top. And of course, some of that blood is going to drip down onto the threshold of the doorway. And I have no problem doing what people have been doing for centuries. And that is noting that putting the blood in that fashion makes the form of the cross and highlights the places where Jesus suffered loss of blood. His two hands outstretched, his head with the crown, and his feet being impaled with the nails of crucifixion. And so I think that that is part of the symbolism we must not miss about Passover, because Jesus becomes the final Passover lamb, the ultimate Passover lamb. Everything is about him. Verse 8. They, meaning the Israelites, shall eat the flesh that night, roasted on the fire, so it's not to be boiled, with unleavened bread and bitter herbs they shall eat it. So that's the menu, is roasted lamb, unleavened bread, and some of the spring growth, like leeks and onions and probably endive or chicory or some sort of leafy plant that they would use like we would use a lettuce. So they're going to eat all of that. Do not eat any of it raw or boiled in water, but rather roasted. Its head with its legs and its inner parts. All right, so when you butcher it out, you're going to gut it, but you're going to put it on a spit, including its head, and apparently including some of the edible inner parts, like the liver and the kidneys and things like that. You shall not let any of it remain until morning. Anything that remains until the morning, you shall burn. So it's a one-time meal. No leftovers allowed. Anything that is not eaten by the time the meal is recessed or declared to be over, that stuff gets burned. In this manner, you shall eat it. Now, this is very important for the very first Passover for the Israelis to get this instruction. You shall eat it with your belt fastened, your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand, and you shall eat it in haste. So you are not to eat it in a relaxed manner. This is important for the first Passover, because they are going to be eating it in anticipation of soon leaving the land of Egypt. You shall eat it in haste. It is he who is Passover, Pesach. Because the word God used earlier was that he would pass over the houses marked with the blood of the Lamb. And so the whole meal becomes the meal of the passing over of God's plague or God's judgment. We'll hear the idea of a destroyer, from which we get the idea of a destroying angel dispatched to take care of this business. Well, we're going to mark our place right there, because when we come back next time and get into the Word, I want to talk more about the connections to Jesus, who is the ultimate Passover.